Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I guess the first half hour of this hour wrote a piece in the Washington Post on December 2nd, starting like this. As states around the country implement broad changes in curriculum from kindergarten through high school, English teachers worry that they will have to replace the dog-eared novels they love with historical documents and nonfiction texts. The Common Core State Standards in English, which have been adopted in 46 states, call for public schools to ramp up nonfiction so that by 12th grade, students will be reading mostly informational text instead of fictional literature. But as teachers excise poetry and classic works of fiction from their classrooms, those who designed the guidelines say it appears that educators have misunderstood them. Lindsay Layton is Washington Post education reporter. She talks about Wisconsin being one of 46 states that have adopted the Common Core State Standards, what it actually means, and how classrooms around the country are beginning to implement these changes. Later in the hour, Kelly O'Keefe Betcher, who is an English teacher at Rufus King High School in Milwaukee, will join us. She teaches she teaches Ibsen and Shakespeare and Hawthorne and Fitzgerald and Richard Wright and Toni Morrison and Zora Neale Hurston and Seamus Heaney and many other classic poets and novelists. And we'll talk about what she thinks about these changes. And I would imagine that we're going to get more than a few phone calls on this issue from those of you who are in the classroom, from those of you who read a lot of literature and read a lot of literature. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page, leave messages there, would you please? That is the Kathleen Dunn Show, because we're highly interested in knowing what you think about this. There are English teachers, Lindsay reports, across the country who are trying to figure out which poetry, short stories, and novels might have to be sacrificed to make room for nonfiction. Among the suggested nonfiction pieces for high school juniors and seniors are de Tocqueville's Democracy in America, Fed Views by the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco. I'm not sure that one's going to fly. An Executive Order 13423, Strengthening Federal Environmental Energy and Transportation Management. There is some talk about the fact that this doesn't really need to be taking place in just English room classrooms. It can also be taking place in history classrooms and in math classrooms, social studies, which would allow English teachers to continue to assign literature, and yet there would have to be a lot of changes for that to take place. So we don't have our guest. Well, darn, that's too bad. Looking forward to talking about this. Well, we'll get our English teacher for sure on the air. I guess that until we find the English teacher, we can move this into a discussion of the topic, certainly, unless we can get our English teacher a little bit earlier here. She's probably teaching, but I want to urge you to call. Let me just tell you more about this as we try to reach her. Our guest, that is. The Common Core Standards, for those who are not familiar with these, are intended to provide consistency and quality across the country in what children learn. And these standards call now for fourth graders to read 50% nonfiction and 50% fiction, and for 12th graders, 70% nonfiction and 30% nonfiction. It clearly moves things toward the direction of nonfiction. The advocates of these standards say that nonfiction gives students better preparation for college and careers by developing things like analytical skills, and that much of what children happen to be reading now and writing has been too easy and actually too self-indulgent. David Coleman, who's a leader of the Common Core movement, who's now president of the College Board, said this: it's rare in the working environment that someone says, "Johnson, I need a market analysis by Friday, but before that, I need a compelling account of your childhood." So it's going to take some time to figure out what all these changes will mean and how they're going to work. But I'm sure English teachers are thinking about this seriously right now and may have to implement a lot of changes in what it is they will be teaching. The Common Core authors say that you can expect more reading like Letter on Thomas Jefferson by John Adams, and not as much teaching of Romeo and Juliet, which is not on the list of Common Core standards, although Macbeth is. A University of Arkansas professor, Sandra Stotsky, said there is no research base for the claim that informational reading will lead to college preparedness better than complex literary study. What do you think? What did you read when you were in high school? Do you think that a lot of the reading has been perhaps too easy, and that it's important for us, if we're going to be successful in the business world, to read things that are nonfiction, to understand the Federal Reserve, to understand complex papers in a variety of areas, historical areas, scientific areas, that it will serve us better as we move along in life? I'm relying on you to, I gave you the broad outline of what these standards are, and we'll be speaking with an English teacher momentarily. We don't know where the Washington Post education reporter is right now. I'm sorry. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Please call 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we'll start our calls with Kevin in Milwaukee. Hello, Kevin.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, hi. I was just going to call. Let me switch phones in case this one dies here.
Okay,
so,
Kevin.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go right ahead.
Okay. I was just going to call because this kind of, they're trying to cut more fiction out of the education curriculum and add more nonfiction because perhaps they think that more information will help people in the job market or so forth. Is that the basic gist of it?
Yeah, we develop more critical thinking and reading skills by reading more complex nonfiction than we do. And some of the complaint has been that some of the fiction that we've been reading has been just too easy, too simple.
Yeah, well, I might agree with that. But the thing is, I think this kind of reflects a general lack of understanding of what's called a liberal arts education really is. And I think a lot of people on the right would call someone like myself an elitist for saying this, but I think a lot of people just don't understand the higher level abstractions and thinking skills that go along with what's called a liberal education, because when you get a liberal education, and especially with good quality fiction, if you're dealing with relationships between characters and so forth, as well as arts and education. I don't think a lot of people understand that. And generally, a broader range of experiences will give you a wider repertoire of, like, problem-solving skills and relationship issues, more kind of an integrative set of problem-solving skills that aren't necessarily easy to measure in terms of, like, denotative knowledge, am I making myself clear?
Yes, yes, you're making yourself very clear.
I'm just really nervous. It's the first time I called into a radio show. I'm usually driving my truck and getting all angry at things that I wish people would call in and say, but I hope I'm making myself a little bit clear because I don't think a lot of people understand the value in these things because they think that, like, I used to be an art teacher for Milwaukee Public Schools, mm-hmm. and a lot of people just didn't take that class very seriously because they thought it was just fluff or something that you just do kind of extra. And when people these days are surprised that companies want a four-year college education instead of just a lot of work experience, but I don't think they understand that with a four-year college education, and this is maybe going off on a tangent, but maybe it's not, but I think it represents, I think it relates to the reading fiction because you're dealing with more integrative, more complex relationships mm-hmm. between characters and events, and the characters in the fiction take place during historical events, so you're dealing with hypothetical situations and more complex life situations that will build a more thoughtful individual in the course of an education.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm glad you made your first call to a radio station, and I hope you'll call again.
Well, thanks a lot.
We found our guest, so thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
All of your calls are going to be good, so stay on the line, would you please? But we did find Lindsay Layton, Washington Post education reporter, who will outline. I think that some of these recommendations are a little bit unclear as to how classroom teachers and school districts are going to be dealing with this and what exactly Common Core standards mean. So we'll get the skinny from her. Lindsay, thank you very much. I'm glad we found you. Hi.
Hi, I'm so glad to be with you.
Yeah, thank you. It seems to me after reading this that it's sort of confusing whose responsibility it is to be teaching more nonfiction and what that nonfiction ought to be and whether or not literature will be sacrificed. Is everybody confused about this or not?
There does seem to be a lot of confusion around the country, and that's, I mean, I think that's probably part and parcel whenever you've got some significant changes that you're going to make, and the devil is always in the implementation. So the folks who wrote the Common Core standards in English say that they did it because they want. They've made these recommendations because they want students to be reading a wide variety of texts. They don't want just fiction. They think that you need to also be able to be exposed to historical documents and technical manuals, and in order to really be prepared for college and or career by the time you graduate from high school, you should get a healthy dose of all kinds of text. And so that's the idea behind this. And they're suggesting that by the time you reach 12th grade, you should be reading primarily nonfiction, so that 70% of what you're reading by grade 12 is nonfiction. It's informational text.
And is it the responsibility of the English teacher to be teaching that?
Well, in practice, that's what the English teachers are saying. They say, hey, this just comes down to us. This means that we have to reorganize our curricula,
right.
and you know, our teaching plans, and reduce the amount of fiction that we teach, because a science teacher is not going to be teaching, you know, historical documents. But the folks, the architects of the Common Core, say actually that's a misinterpretation. Science teachers could teach informational texts, and math teachers could, you know, you could introduce your students to the writings of Euclid, you know, in a math class, and there are opportunities where teachers of other subjects could introduce more reading, and that's really what needs to be done. And they say that English teachers don't have to carry this burden alone, but in fact, the way it's being interpreted around the country is that it's on the shoulders of English teachers. Many that I've talked to have said their principals and their department heads have told them that they're irresponsible for this.
Hmm.
So that's where the confusion lies.
When I was reading your article published on December 2nd, you write among the suggested nonfiction pieces, let me just include one here, is Fed Views by the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, 2009. And I was thinking, I'm out of your class if that's what I have to read. Are you kidding?
Well, that was one of the suggested readings that's part of these new standards. And you know, the idea is that really, if you're going to have the skill set to go to work after high school or to go on to college, you ought to be able to read some difficult texts, some texts that are, you know, that are not stories, that are informational, and that are frankly hard and maybe boring, but you should be capable of reading it and understanding it. And that, you know, the idea is that the workplace is not always filled with entertaining reading, as, you know, most of us know from our daily lives, and that they want students to be prepared for that and not unable to deal with it.
What about students being prepared for understanding the human experience? And I'm wondering, it seems to me as though this would necessitate all kinds of changes, including what you study to become an English teacher. Would you no longer study Shakespeare or Whitman or Swift or Toni Morrison or Ibsen or Elie Wiesel or all of these people who you study and you read very carefully to prepare yourself to become a teacher. That's a whole world of difference than learning about, you know, the Federal Reserve.
Right. Well, there are teacher educators that I've spoken with who say, you know, if you're studying to become an English teacher, it's really focused on literature, and that's the emphasis, and that's what we're preparing these teachers for, and so they're not in a position to teach that Federal Reserve, to teach any of those other texts. That it's really far afield for them, and there are some. I spoke with Sandra Stotsky. She's at she's an academic. She's at the University of Arkansas, and she wrote the Massachusetts English standards, which are well regarded around the country, and she said, you know what, this whole idea of emphasizing nonfiction is misguided, because if you really expose students to rich, complex literature, they will learn how to interpret and understand texts, and they'll have the same skills that they can apply to nonfiction if you just focus on complicated, rich literature. And she says the problem with our national reading scores, which have really been flat for decades, that they've been mediocre and flat, is that we have dumbed down the young adult literature that we give to students, that they're reading stuff that since the 1960s, she thinks, that has really been diluted and not complex and not rich and not challenging, and she thinks that's the problem with our flat reading scores, which is, it's really why the Common Core standards have been written, is to try to bring up our reading scores and improve, as a nation, our students' ability to read.
Let's go to phone calls. We have many of them. Cynthia in Menominee, hi.
Hi. The first caller that I listened to before your speaker came on, he said pretty much what I was going to say. We don't teach literature, however, in a vacuum. When you introduce literature, we introduce history, the setting in which it's taken, and once again, the blame for the shortcomings of society is being put on the teachers. Students are not reading because they have other things they find more entertaining. It's not because they're not being taught literature right. They're not reading for recreation. And good literature, if it's taught well, introduces all the complex reading.
Do you know if anybody's... I think that Cynthia is right about that, just from my own observation, that young people are not doing reading for recreational purposes as much as other generations were. Is that just an old fuddy-duddy who loves reading lamenting that, or is there truth in that?
No, I do think there's truth in that. I haven't seen the most recent... there have been studies on this, and I haven't seen the most recent numbers, but I did see recently some national statistics that showed, and this is, of course, so obvious, but the kids who report reading for fun, reading for recreation outside of school, have the strongest reading and English skills on standardized tests around the country. Mm-hmm. So there's a direct correlation, of course. If you're reading for fun outside of school, you're doing well in school, and so there's a very strong connection there. So I think it's true that, of course, right now we've got so many distractions, and kids spend a lot of their leisure hours, reading truncated messages and texting,
right.
And
yes,
there's videos, and there's just mm-hmm. all sorts of sensory diversions. But I think that there has been a decline in the number of hours that are spent just reading for pleasure among children and students.
Cynthia, thanks for the call. Gary in Ripon. Hi, Gary.
Well, I'm just going to echo probably what a lot of the other callers are going to say, and I'm not meaning to place a value judgment on it, but I think the goal of this is to to have the schools turn out good industrial workers, and maybe that's what they should be doing, not to make things more complicated and so forth. I think the view is that the school needs to turn out people that can go right into jobs and do the job and not worry so much about these other more complicated things.
Is that one of the reasons for doing this, Lindsay?
Well, the idea is that when you're done with high school, if you've and you've gone through these classes that follow the Common Core standards, that you'll be ready for college and or career. So, the point I think that the folks, the architects of these new standards, are making is that when you're graduating from high school today and you're looking for a job, a lot of these jobs, industrial jobs, require a certain amount of technical knowledge now. It's very hard to be get a job that is good paying and requires few skills. So I think that the idea of the nonfiction requirement of these standards, the idea is to try to improve your ability to read technical documents, because so many jobs today for high school graduates, if they're decent paying jobs, they do require some ability to read technical manuals, documents. You know, it's very hard to get one of those jobs without that ability.
It seems to me, Lindsay, as though this is a fairly large change in what we read in school, particularly in the high school level. How did all of this happen, and when is it fully implemented? Were there a lot of public forum discussions all over the country about the Common Core standards?
Well, that's an interesting point. It's actually, it's been really, I think, under the radar.
I think
most folks, I don't think, unless you're in education, I don't think most folks have even heard of this term, the Common Core Standards. But this is an idea that's been, it's been around and it's been building for years, because right now we have such a disparate system. If you're a fifth grader in Massachusetts, by the end of fifth grade, you may be walking out with a set of knowledge and skills that's completely different from a fifth grader in Mississippi. And if you go to school in Hawaii, what you learn in fourth grade may be completely different than what you learn if you're in school in Florida. And so we've had this complete sort of patchwork of local control and local requirements. And nationally, we're not doing so well in terms of competition with other countries and on the international competitive framework. And so there have been, in education circles, there's been talk for years about trying to have some kind of standard so that when you finish fifth grade in Massachusetts, you know the same thing as when you finish fifth grade in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And so this has been discussed for years and years. But what really kicked it into high gear was the Obama administration, when they announced their Race to the Top competition a couple of years ago, where they offered huge amounts of money to schools around the country if they met certain criteria. And one of those qualifications was adopting a Common Core standard. And so all these states, because it was 2008, 2009, the Great Recession had hit, the budgets were strapped, they all wanted some of this federal money. So everybody basically lined up and signed on to these Common Core standards. That's what really kicked it up. So now we have 46 states and the District of Columbia that have all agreed, and they've all signed on. So the state departments of education and the governors have all agreed to participate in this. And they're slowly being rolled out now, and they should be in place by 2014. That's when May 2014 is when the new tests are going to be given in states around that are participating, and they're going to be based on these new standards.
Mm. One more phone call for you, and then we'll go to an English teacher, Anthony in Milwaukee. Hi. Anthony, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, sir, please.
Oh, I'm very sorry. I'm driving right now, so it is a little bit difficult to
be careful, please.
Hear you.
Yeah. Okay.
I switch you guys out infrequently, and I'm an avid reader. I studied English literature in college, and I was actually, I thought it was funny and almost abhorrent what I was hearing, that they were going to switch nonfiction or put it in a literature class where it does not belong. It is not the same type of writing. It isn't the same type of mindset. When you read literature, good literature, you get an idea of an individual person, individual thought process, individual ideas, dreams, and that does not happen in a technical text. If you want to teach that type of stuff, you should put it in a different class so that the technical that you can, you then, so you're learning that mode. You can learn reading just by reading, but that's what I wanted to say. I thought it was ridiculous. If you want to build a world of Amazons, that's fine, do it. That's not what a literature class is for.
Lindsay.
Yes. I think that's a interesting point of view. I think a lot of people would agree with that. But there are others who say that that nonfiction does not necessarily that it could belong in an English class. One of the suggested texts is Politics in the English Language by George Orwell, you know, the great essayist. And certainly you can make an argument that teaching George Orwell in an English class makes sense, and that's a good fit. So there's a wide variety among these informational texts. Some of them you would scratch your head and say, does that really belong in an English class?
Right.
Other pieces you think, well, actually that makes sense. Just because there's nonfiction, there's narrative journalism, that could be taught in an English class. So there's a wide variety here.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also hard to imagine, particularly a math class, taking on Euclid when you've got so much else to learn in a math class. Maybe there's a teacher out there who's going to do that, but I don't see it happening. Do you?
Well, I think a lot of math teachers would be, would be hesitant about taking that on. So I don't really see it, honestly.
Yeah. Lindsay, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, sure. My pleasure.
Lindsay Layton is Washington Post education reporter, and we direct you to a piece that she did, which caught our attention, December 2nd. It was published, Common Core Sparks War Over Words. We are going to continue our conversation and take phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We hope soon to be speaking with an English teacher in Milwaukee at a high school who can talk about her response to the Common Core standards and whether or not preparations are in place to change the curriculum. Our number for you to join this conversation, and you have a lot to say about it, which is great, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, and the Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. I'm also wondering if this is new to a lot of you. I agree with Lindsay that I think that this has happened without a lot of people understanding that this is happening. It's good to know when something like this is going to happen. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this hour, we should have a really interesting conversation. There may be a suit on behalf of, I think it's elephants and orangutans and dolphins. The Non-Human Rights Project, through education and litigation, is attempting to change the common law status of some non-human animals from mere things, which lack the capacity to possess any legal right, to persons who possess such fundamental rights as bodily integrity, bodily liberty, and those other legal rights to which evolving standards of morality, scientific discovery, and human experience entitle them. That will be tomorrow during this time period. Kelly O'Keefe Betcher is joining us now, English teacher at Rufus King High School in Milwaukee. She teaches IB English and teaches, well, great literature. So we're going to be welcoming your phone calls for her. Kelly, thank you so much for being in on this discussion.
You're welcome.
We were just saying that I don't think many people know this is happening. Why don't we?
To be honest with you, I had no idea it was happening.
You didn't?
No, no. The controversy as it is, I saw it probably in the Washington Post, and then some people on one of the teachers' websites were talking about it. But honestly, maybe it's because it was semester time and people were very involved in semester exams and just the day-to-day rigor of being in our classroom. When I posted a comment in a Facebook group, there's probably close to 2,000 teachers in that group, probably only 2 people responded.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's not on our radar yet. And now I'm going to just give some quick instruction to my seniors who are all sitting here silently staring at me. You want to read that white handout, Sam? The white handout. You want to read that? So
you're in class right now. We should say,
and we're definitely gonna. I've got some seniors who want to talk to you too about the difference between reading fiction and nonfiction. But I think there's a mixed. There's definitely a mixed reaction to one, the whole Common Core, as just as an essential question. Does it work? Does it make sense?
Right.
What would the implementation of it look like? And then there's some of the motivation behind the shift towards nonfiction. If the concern is that the fiction that high schools are reading is not rigorous enough, that's a different conversation, right? That's very different than saying we need to pump up the jam here, so let's put in some more nonfiction. That, to me, is a flawed conversation, because you can have 70% nonfiction, but that doesn't mean we're going to be teaching critical thinking skills. Nonfiction on its own does not guarantee, it's not the magic wand.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the magic bullet. Rigorous teaching, high standards, great materials are what prepare students for life and university study and really being rigorous at the college level.
There was some discussion the first half hour that maybe one of the reasons this has happened is there has not been challenging, rigorous, interesting literature taught before students get to high school. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's true, Kelly?
On a school-to-school basis, probably. Probably. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of autonomy, which I think the Common Core standards are trying to address, right? To try and say, let's make sure that no matter what school you're in, what classroom you're in, you're going to have an opportunity to read the best stuff. But that gets murky. What's the best stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Is the best stuff Shakespeare? Is the best stuff Lewis Dye by Toni Morrison? Who, every year I teach that novel, it changes kids' lives.
Hmm.
It changes their lives. Is it Seamus Heaney? Right? Is it? That's such a tough qualitative question. But you're right. There's a lot of stuff out there that does not push, does not enliven, does not engage young people's minds in the way that it should. And that's forever, right? Right? That's not a new problem. I think that's a good school. No matter where it is, in some tiny little town in the class of 23, or a big, thriving public school, the decision of what we put in front of our young people and the rigor of the material that they take on, it's defining.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be, my personal opinion, it needs to be culturally relevant. It needs to be gender relevant. It needs to look at social class. We've got to have a canon. We need to look at these works that stand the test of time. And we need to have works that make, I think, our students a little uncomfortable, too. My juniors right now are reading Cummings. He's hard. He's a really hard poet. But there's huge satisfaction in that, too, of taking on a work of literature or prose or an essay that demands something big of you.
Some of the other things that were talked about is other classrooms taking on literature. So you would have a math teacher who might teach Euclid. Can you see math teachers doing that?
Well, I'm married to a math teacher.
I know you are. That's why I asked you.
I think he would have a heart attack. My reading of that, and I might be reading it wrong, is that I don't know that the other subject matters would have to be teaching literature. I think that the other disciplines would be infusing their biology class, infusing their physics class, infusing their photography class with more reading, more nonfiction text. My experience is my colleagues are doing that. Whenever you need to provide any kind of historical or social context, I would assume you're going to go to nonfiction. You're going to go to a text that will support you teaching whatever the content is. So, you know, I don't teach math, but I'm assuming that there would be ways to fold in some nonfiction text to support the teaching of calculus or whatever. But I didn't interpret it that other disciplines were going to be responsible for literature. But that might just be my lack of knowledge of what is cooking here with the Common Core standards. But if you want to make an English teacher crazy, suggest to her or him that they're responsible for covering 90%, 70% of this reading. It has to be across the curriculum.
Right. I would imagine it does. Kelly O'Keefe Betcher is our guest, and she also has a couple students in her classroom who would like to speak to what we're talking about. She's an English teacher at Rufus King High School, which is based in Milwaukee. Our phone number, and we have lots and lots of people on the line, so we'll go to phone calls momentarily again. 800-486-8655. We're talking this hour about the Common Core state standards. Wisconsin, one of 46 states that have adopted these standards, and they are to go in full effect in 2014. What's striking to me from what Kelly had to say is nobody knows very much about this at all, including the people who are supposed to be implementing the changes. So I don't know what's the story with that, but what it says essentially is that by 12th grade, 70% of what students read must be nonfiction. And so we're talking about that this hour of the show. 800-486-8655 is the number. 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to your phone calls now for Kelly O'Keefe Betcher. Artie in Spooner is calling. Hi, Artie.
Hello, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Very good. Thank you for having my call. I just want to comment that I am got my education degree in 1990, and I remember the big thing in 1990 was the main objectives and the cooperative learning techniques for education. So I find it interesting that, you know, they educated all of us in these teaching techniques, and all of a sudden they're going to switch. So you've got all these teachers that have, you know, expertise in main objectives and the anticipatory set and the cooperative learning, and now they're going to just switch it and go, okay, here's what you're doing now. So good luck with no real training on how to teach these core curriculums.
Mm-hmm. Kelly, and it sounds like people are clueless about this. Has there been talk about Common Core standards and Wisconsin adopting them and what it means for your high school?
This is actually one of her students, so I don't...
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
Oh, okay. All right, who is this?
My name's Livia.
Hi.
Hi.
And you're in English class right now?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and tell me about the kind of reading that you do. Some of what we talked about earlier was an indictment of the reading or lack of serious reading that takes place before high school, and that's why reading scores have been flat in this country. Do you think that the reading that you did when you were in middle school, when you were in elementary school, was worthless?
I don't think it was worthless, but I definitely think reading is somewhat of a student's own prerogative. You can't just read in school and expect to be a learned and vivid reader. You have to read outside of school, and the more you read, the better you write. And I think a bigger problem is that reading, especially in like the younger community, is seen as something that's not, quote, cool. Like, people could be doing things other than reading, and I think that in order to improve scores on reading, especially in like state standardized tests, that reading should be encouraged from an early age, and it should be made out to be something that's beneficial rather than something that's seen as negative.
Mm-hmm. You obviously read outside your classroom.
Yeah.
Why do you? Why do you do that?
Well, I know that I read a lot, and I think that the more you read, the better you write, because you have a bigger vocabulary and you have more knowledge of different sentence structures and different ways of writing. I also think reading is something that you can escape in reading. And in terms of, like, the fiction and nonfiction thing, I think both are beneficial. Fiction has the ability to teach lessons that nonfiction cannot, because sometimes fiction may be far too out there to happen in real life. So I think they're equally important.
What would you think of the idea, which is supposed to be taking place in 46 states by 2014 completely, that 70% of your reading, starting by the time you're a junior in high school, will be nonfiction and not fiction?
I think, I think it's silly. I think it should be divided equally because both are equally important. As I said, you can learn lessons from fiction that you can't see in nonfiction because it couldn't happen in real life. But in the at the same time, nonfiction teaches lessons equally as important. So I think it should be divided 50-50 rather than 70-30. Because you go to college and you read fiction too, and just because you know how to read nonfiction doesn't mean that you'll do well in a workplace.
Mm-hmm. Tell me your plans. Where are you going from here? You sound like you're a terrific student and the kind of person every teacher would like to have in his or her classroom. Is literature a passion of yours? Will you go on to continue to study literature?
I enjoy reading, but I don't intend to major in it or anything like that.
What do you intend to do,
Olivia? I plan on majoring in economics. I applied to 9 colleges. I heard back from 2, so we'll see.
Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know where Kelly... Is Kelly teaching again now?
I can give her the phone.
All right, thanks. We'll take more phone calls. Thanks, Olivia, very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. Are you there, Kelly?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Sorry, I'm multitasking. I've got a PowerPoint going on. We're starting The Things They Carried by Tim O'Brien, so I'm laying a little historical context for the novel.
Ah, so you're doing a little history. And
I am.
Yeah.
I am. And this young Livia, that was Livia David, by the way.
Yeah.
It matters to have the historical and the social context.
Right.
I have another student who's interested in speaking as well.
Okay.
Whenever you're ready for
All right, we'll go to a couple more callers. We have a ton of phone calls.
Okay.
Mary in Eau Claire. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I'd like to agree with what your prior callers have said, but I'd also like to raise the point of reading it nonfiction or technical stuff. You can read instructions on how to put your furniture together from IKEA. And how to understand that, and that's one thing. But if you're reading technical reading, if you're comparing, I'll stay away from the creationist controversy, Lysenko versus modern biology, you could read and understand Lysenko, but there's no basis for evaluating whether or not the truth claim of that is... whether or not that's really true.
Right.
I think what you're speaking to is the difference between reading for functionality, right? Reading a bus map or reading how to program, your microwave, whatever, right? There's that kind of like life skill reading that we entrust our schools to provide. But then we start moving up into some different types of reading, the reading that some neuroscience would indicate increases our empathy. I've watched students over the years read Night by Elie Wiesel, and maybe they didn't understand the magnitude of that historical event, and it shifted the way they looked at the world by understanding, right? So I think we're talking about reading, and I completely agree with you. That this idea of are we reading just to be able to function in the world, or are we reading to really be awake and alive and engaged in the world in a different way?
Right. Mary, thanks very much for your call. Randy in Madison. Hi, Randy.
Hi, good morning. So much to say about books, so little time. I think your argument would have been bolstered, however, if you were not teaching somebody as ridiculously overrated as Tim O'Brien. Studies basically show that people who like fiction tend to read 80-90% fiction and the rest nonfiction, and vice versa for those who like nonfiction. But I really envy my good friend, who's also named Randy, who tends to go about 60% nonfiction, 40% fiction. He's very, very smart in both areas, and he's smarter than me because I tend to be was the one in the fiction area. Mm-hmm. I think that we're reaching a morning after point where we're starting to realize that, you know, Harry Potter didn't make us that much smart, that there was no magic wand to get people that engaged, that the glitter dust was just that dust.
Thanks, thanks, Randy, very much for your call. Kelly, I want to speak to another student. I was interested when you talked about preparing your students for the Tim O'Brien read. Yep. Are you reading nonfiction to do that, historical analysis of Vietnam, or what?
We will. What they're doing right now is today we're just laying out the structure of the novel and what it means to discern the difference between a memoir as well as a work of fiction. And mm-hmm. as the previous caller, you know, hinted at, this is, O'Brien's tricky. Because is it fiction? Is it nonfiction? Can we tell another human being what their story is? And he says it's invented, but then there are other things that are rooted in fact. So, absolutely, there will be a lot of nonfiction resources to support our understanding. At the same breath, it's not a history class, so I cannot teach the Vietnam War. But I certainly need them to understand what a platoon is. Salmon, you can click. I need them to understand jungles. I need them to understand, you know, the title of this book, the things they carried. What did that mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think I go back to what several of your callers have said, is that reading makes our lives bigger. If we're going to have a great big life, we have to read. And the more we read, the better we get at it. And for some people, it's just, they're going to land in nonfiction, and it's always going to make sense to them, and they are always going to go to it. But to deny our students the opportunity to have an excellent balance of both fiction and nonfiction, you know, we might miss that kid mm-hmm. who couldn't wait until they read Richard Wright's, you know, his memoir, which for some kids, that changes it for them. So whenever you're ready, I've got Miela Fatale who's
all right. We'll say goodbye to you and let you teach full time.
Excellent.
Instead of doing three things. Who are we talking to now?
This is Miela Fatale.
Thank you. Miela, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi there.
Have there been books or a book that has really made you see the world as a much bigger place that has essentially changed the way you live?
Oh, most definitely. Last year, my junior literature class, we read The God of Small Things. I want to say, I can't remember the author, I want to say it was Arundhati Roy. But the book itself, just to get a different realm of cultures outside of my own and outside of what I've learned and kind of captured from American society and traditions, was captivating. It was interesting just to read about these different cultures and to see how different people in different countries work and just their mannerisms.
Mm-hmm.
And me being a lover of just culture and traditions and everything unknown to me, it was definitely a wide-opening experience.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of this Common Core recommendation, although it will be, I don't know if it's going to be just a recommendation or mandatory, for you to center your reading on nonfiction when you're in high school?
I actually got a chance to read the Huffington Post article on the Common Core.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did. And I think rather than, like, play hide-and-seek with the elements of literature, I think the real problem at hand is that some students lack the ability to just read and analyze information presented in written forms. I believe that students initially need to spend more time actually reading critically than being taught reading strategies. I found that students who read just for the love of it perform better in written assignments than, obviously, their non-reading counterparts. And I think those are the strategies that need to be implemented, that reading critically and reading firsthand is at most importance, rather than focusing on whether reading fiction or nonfiction or both.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much. All the best to you. I don't know, from the sound of those students, they could be, they've done their reading, haven't they? They're ready. They're good. Thank you so much. Thanks, everybody, for your calls. I'm sorry we had some technical snafus this hour. There's a lot of interest in this topic, I can tell you that. And we will investigate this a little further to see why it is that teachers don't know about this happening and how the state of Wisconsin plans to implement that. So we will do that. We will do that down the road. Thanks to Kelly O'Keefe Betcher, English teacher at Rufus King High School, for being with us. Lindsay Layton, Washington Post education reporter. Rhonda Fanning, the producer of this program. And Brett Jaspers, we thank him. He's not here anymore, but he worked on this show. So thanks. We'll be with you again tomorrow. Great conversations ahead on the Ideas Network.